Hey, this is Stephen Thompson. On this bonus episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, we're bringing you an interview with Desus Nice and the Kid Mero. They're the hosts of the late-night show Desus and Mero on Showtime. They spoke to our pal Sam Sanders, host of the wonderful podcast It's Been a Minute. I'll let Sam take it from here.
It is such an honor to talk to you both. I know both of your voices so well, but some of our listeners might not. So both of you, one by one, say your name and the first concert you're going to attend once the pandemic is over.
Yo, it's your boy, Desus Nice. You know it from Showtime's Desus and Mero. I am the chocolate one. The first concert I'm going to attend when this panoramic is over is going to be Coachella. And it's not going to be attending it. Me and Mero are going to be headlining it, and it's going to be great.
Wow. Yes, and I am the Kid Mero, the human durag. You know what I'm saying? I am the caramel one. I'm the Steph Curry flavored one, if you will. You know what I'm saying?
But,
we headlining Coachella, bro. That's dropping a bomb right here on NPR. We're going there in a chopper.
Okay, so if y'all are going to headline Coachella, is it going to be like a Baychella situation with like the marching band and all the dancers and the bleachers? Like, how big will this production be?
It's going to be great. We're going to bring it. We're going to bring a classic Bronx icon. So, you know, J-Lo is going to come through. We're going to have Justice Sonya Mayor come through on a hovercraft. We're going to have the Big Pun hologram. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be mind-blowing. We're going to have French Montana singing an opera. It's going, oh, man, you guys aren't ready.
Y'all not ready for the French Montana doing sotto voce.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders, and you just heard my two guests for this episode, Desus Nice and the Kid Mero. The two of them host a late-night show on Showtime called Desus and Mero. So this show, it is an incredibly hilarious mix of pop culture and politics and internet and random headlines. And also, these two on this show, they book some pretty big guests. Fellow Bronx native Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Is it hard to get a good bacon, egg, and cheese in D.C.?
Impossible.
Yeah.
There's no bodegas anywhere. I don't know how anybody eats in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Which probably explains why everyone's fighting all the time.
Yeah, they're cranky.
Stacey Abrams.
Buffy versus Battlestar Galactica.
Buffy.
Okay.
Love Battlestar. I do have to explain this one because the hate mail was real.
They don't play
Battlestar Galactica, but Buffy was there for me when I needed her. And
Barack Obama.
They said we were going to hoop. I thought you were going to come up with some hoops of Jordans or something and just
Let me just say that I saw some of the footage of y'all with Booker.
Before you say anything, that was a deep fake and fake news.
Yes, so it was.
Misrepresent us. If you post that video on Twitter, it will be disclaimed and there'll be note on the bottom.
I'm just saying, here's the good news. Looks like y'all could play for the Knicks.
Ooh, wow. Of course, like anyone trying to work during the pandemic, the Kid Mero and Desus Nice have had to make some adjustments. If you watch the show now, everything looks pretty seamless as they broadcast from their homes. But Desus Nice and the Kid Mero told me that it wasn't always that way, especially at the start of this whole thing.
If you remember, there was like a little gap between our last studio show and our first show that we did in the pharmacy. And so, like, when we did our last show, we didn't have an actual audience.
Damn, I was going to gas it and be like, yo, every other late night show is wild buns and doing with no audience.
No, we are also wild buns. Yeah. We have no real audience. No, it's no real to us. We have our staff, crew, and loved ones in here.
So it was already, we were kind of veering off, and put it in a weird way. You know, like, we were getting a little dope sick. We wasn't getting that straight to the vein stuff that we were usually getting with the show. So then, you know, we have no show. I haven't seen Mero in a couple of weeks. To go into a Zoom, and then I see Mero, I see Julia, I see Tony, I see everyone from Jax Media, I see the production staff.
No, in this time off, I've taught myself three new languages. I've been doing yoga. I've been making bread. I've raised pigeons, and I'm lying. You know what I've done? This is the biggest achievement I've done. I adjusted the sensitivity on my controller for Call of Duty, and it's made a big difference.
Yo, huge difference.
It felt like the first day of school. It was fantastic to be back in there.
Really?
It was like a relief, and to be able, like, the idea that we were able to make the show from our house, that's like some James Bond kind of, like, high tech. Like, it's... like looking back, the idea that we transformed the homes we live in into Hollywood studios, and we're able to not just make a show, but make a fire show that actually stepped up what we were making before is just mind-blowing. Every now and then I just stop and think about it. And it's like, if we ever, you know, get out of this pragmatism, you know, we're going to sit back and look at this. Like, wow, we really did this.
So how did y'all decide where to make the setup in the home studios? Because, like, Jesus, you're, like, recording from your shoe room, your shoe closet. Mm-hmm. Is it a shoe? I mean, like, what do you call it? How do you decide that space?
You know what? This is the sneaker room. This is my pride and joy. This is what I've worked hard for. And now that we are now inside the press room, it doesn't make any sense because I have all these sneakers and I have nowhere to wear them to, especially because there's 16 inches of snow outside. But no, I felt like this is like me and Meryl were like, yo, we got to make fire backgrounds. We can't let people think we're out here living like brokies. So, you know, had to throw some sneakers in the back. So I threw it up in what we called my foot locker.
I love it. Now, so Meryl, you don't record in the shoe room, but you have, like, I've seen your setup. Describe that.
Yeah, me, I mean, like, it's changed, though, for season three. Because, yo, the basement was becoming a fire hazard, bro. Like, it's dope to do TV because, like, framing was crucial.
Yep.
There's so much stuff off to the sides that's out of frame.
Like, wardrobe.
Out of control.
Wardrobe, props.
Racks.
A green screen.
Cables.
Everything.
All types of stuff. You know what I mean? Then I got my kids running down here talking about, I want to use the PlayStation. Them throwing all over the place. I was like, oh, no, baby. Like, the final straw was like, I come down here and there's like a power strip with like 80 wires coming out of it. And there's just like paper on top of it and like this lights on.
No,
I was like, no. I was like, I ain't waking up to no smoke in the middle of the night. Like, oh, no, I didn't go put out the studio.
So you both seem to be like making the best of working from home and making your show from home. But like, what's the worst part?
I think the worst part is the lack of human interaction because we've done field shoots and like we shot the cold open. We actually went back to the studio, but you know, like going back to the studio now costs, I'm going to age myself here. It costs an arm and a leg in the middle. Cause you know, you got to do all the COVID testing. You got to set up zone A, zone B, all of this in the middle, you know, it's just so much. It's just so much, but you get the chance to, I get the chance to see Miro. We get the chance to feed off our energy in person.
Bruh, just the, something as simple as, like, yo, if, like, I say a fire joke, or Jesus says a fire joke, and you just dap each other up because it's so funny, like, in the midst of laughing, like, just that, you know what I mean? That physical, that hit!
But a socially distanced dap. We use the elbows, okay? We're not... we had Dr. Fauci on the show. He has our personal numbers. If we start wilding, he's going to call us. And he's going to G-check us. So I don't want that problem.
He's like, hey, it's Tony from Brooklyn.
Hey,
told you to keep your hands to yourself.
I'm sorry, Dr. Fauci. I'm sorry, doctor.
Do y'all just, like, call up Fauci the chat? Yeah. Please say you do.
What's up,
Big Fauci? Kind
of, he seems like the homie.
You got a DR mask I can rock?
You know what? But in all honesty, when we had Dr. Fauci on, you know how if you've seen our interviews, you know they're pretty rip roaring. We don't come up with questions ahead of time. It's all on the spot. And when we were interviewing him, there were times he just kind of like laughed. It was like, I'm not gonna answer that. So to see him now in the press conferences and to see him smiling and being able to answer, because he wanted to rip. In our interview, you could see it. You could see he wanted to say Trump was an idiot. He wanted to be like, what the hell is this guy doing? But he had to keep his job. You know, like, that was painful to go through. Just seeing someone who's an expert in a field not being able to do that. It's like, tell us after you can only take shots from the other side of the half court line. Like, no, you know what? You tell Steph Curry that, he's like,
layups only, Steph.
You tell Steph,
only layups.
You tell Steph Curry that, he's still dropping 54. So I don't know what to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, just hearing you talk about your interview with Dr. Fauci, that was a big deal. That was serious stuff. He's an important person. You know, you had Stacey Abrams on for your season premiere. You interviewed Barack Obama. You've talked to AOC a few times. You've talked to Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg. When y'all started the podcast years ago, did y'all want to interview politicians and world leaders like this? How did the show move into that space?
I mean,
we just wanted to interview anybody, really. Yeah. Like, we just talked to, like, that's really where we were at. Like, in the early incarnations of the show,
It literally was like, yo, who's in your phone book?
Yeah.
Like, who's the most popping who's the most popping person in your phone book? You know what I'm saying? So, like, we'll talk to anybody, you know. And in the case of Fauci, that was like a real smart move on his part, because he came on and spoke to a community that really needed to be spoken to about what's going on. And it is super underserved in terms of, like, media. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because, like, you know, Julio that drives a BX-12, he's not watching, you know what I'm saying, like, CNN at, like, 10 p.m. He's on the job. You know what I mean? So when he gets home at 11 o'clock and he wants to have a little cognac, you know what I mean, and relax with his boys, he gets the, you know, he gets the
Jesus, Mero, and Dr. Fauci.
There you go. Tony from Brooklyn.
It's your boy. Just a couple of New York boys. Yeah. But no, like, we'll interview anybody. And, like, I think the people we've interviewed are mind-blowing. Like, where we stop and think about, we've had Diddy on. We've had David Letterman. Yeah. And then it's weird because, like, the people we've had on are huge outside looking in. But then if you know our relationship and, like, our relationship to, like, Bodega Hive and our podcast, like, it's mind-blowing we interviewed Obama. It's more mind-blowing that we interviewed Mike Francesa. Like, it's little things like that that are just, it's levels to it, bro. Like, every now and then you look back and you're like, yo, oh, wow. Bro, we interviewed Ty Dolla $ign? Whoa! Like,
whoa!
So when you have interviews with politicians, how do you figure out, you know, what you think your responsibility is to the listeners? Y'all are, you know, podcast hosts, you're entertainers, but do you feel a pressure to hold those in power accountable in any way when you talk to them?
Like, in a workaround kind of way, you know what I mean? Like, you're gonna talk, you can't talk in talking points on our show. That's it.
Okay.
That's, like, the rule.
Okay.
Like, you have to be a real person and talk, like, you know, have a dialogue with us. You know what I mean? And if Jesus asks you a question, answer it straight up. If I ask you a question, answer it straight up. You know what I mean? Don't hit the cliche. Like, whatever you just said on, you know, Good Morning America or whatever, don't come on our show and repeat it.
Even on that level, there's only but so much you can ask a person when they come on the show, because they have a publicist. There's, you know, like, our show is not a gotcha show. We're not coming on there like, hey, you messed up. We hear this clip of you saying this in March 2014, and now what, you flip-flop. Like, that's not, we're not reporters like that. We're not Meet the Press. That's what that show is for. Our show is we're pretty much introducing these people to our audience sometimes. So it'd be weird to be like, hey, here's this guy you've never heard about. Now we're going to put his feet on the fire. Like, it's like, that's just weird. So our thing is more like a conversational quality. We're going to ask you real questions about a real life and just see what you are as a real person before you're a candidate.
Coming up, Jesus and Mero for mayor. We talk politics.
There is so much Black excellence in the sciences that we want to celebrate. So in honor of Black History Month, all this week, Shortwave is featuring conversations with Black scientists and educators, people doing incredible work and pushing for a world where science serves everyone. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
I have read y'all mentioned in interviews a lot recently about what an interview between the two of y'all and Donald Trump might feel like, might be like, if y'all could book him in his post-presidency life.
Oh my God.
What is the first question y'all ask Donald Trump?
I would, like, a very West Indian way, I'd be like, are you happy? You happy with the mess you made? Look around. Look around.
No, but like you said, it's not a gotcha show, but we would definitely be like, yo, my man. Like, you know what I mean? We'd be the voice of every New Yorker that had to, like, watch this bozo.
Yeah.
And the wildest thing is, like, this guy's from New York, and somehow he painted himself as, like, some champion of, like, the Rust Belt.
Yeah.
I'm like, fam, how did you do that? How did you do that?
What we'd have to
You're
do is be like,
grifters.
He's from Queens,
Queens, yeah. QU, you know? He used to hang in Queensbridge with Mobb Deep before he switched up. But no, we're going to ask him, we'll just be like, yo, Trump, list off all the things you accomplished as president. And what's he, I'll be like, nope. Wrong. Nope. Nope. Nah. Nope. Wrong. Not valid. Incorrect. He's only putting up with maybe a minute of that. Because he's very, that's the thing, he's also super sensitive. Remember, he couldn't stay for that interview on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl. So there's no,
he
couldn't
out.
Even handle getting on a train at rush hour with New York City junior high schoolers. There's no way he'd be able to handle
for
us.
For real. That's it. Yo, put him in a junior high school assembly and he's like, toast.
Yo, who's this orange old guy? Yo.
Yo, get him out of here.
Yo, my man look like
you bozo.
Yo, you look like Tang. You're like, yo, wow.
Yo, why your hair stay like that? Yo. Why your hair is like T.I.'s hat? It don't move.
Oh, man. How has the last few years of seeing your show blow up and being able to talk to a lot of these politicians and talk about politics to a really big audience maybe changed the way the two of you as people think about politics?
Oh, definitely. I think you're more aware of the dangers of cults of personality in politics, or just getting swept up in embracing just the charisma of a candidate versus the actual substance. And the biggest idea, the biggest example of that is Donald Trump. And you kind of see it. It's kind of happening again. We have the mayoral race here in New York City, and you're seeing people, and they're like, I'm behind this candidate. And these candidates haven't even said anything. These candidates have not laid out any policy. They haven't said what they're going to do for nightlife coming back in New York City, how they're going to help restaurant workers, what they're even going to do about bike lanes. Little things that really matter. It's going to be a huge, one of the biggest elections in New York City's history. Mm. And you have people, they're just doing photo ops. You have people just, it's not serious to them. It seems like it's some sort of a popularity contest. And then you think about that and you're just like, okay, if this person isn't really helping New York City, should we have them on the show? Like, are we just helping inflate someone who's going to possibly harm New York if they get elected? It changes the way you look at things. Because now, you know, we joke and say we're kingmakers, but we are a platform for visibility for these people. And we have to use that power accordingly and be responsible with it.
100%. That's been the thing. It's just like, okay, like, you did a cool video. And it got, you know, 10 million views. But what are you going to do about the homelessness situation? What are you going to do about, you know what I'm saying? Like, child hunger, you know? What are you going to do about COVID responses in schools? And, you know, all these, like, real deal stuff, you know what I mean, that's coming up. But it's like, hello, regular person.
Yeah, I'm doing a photo op. Let me help you tie your do-rag.
I mean, exactly. Like, I mean, if you read between the lines, low-key, what we're saying is me and Meryl are going to run for mayor. Like, it's time.
What?
Yeah, we're going to be the first.
Campaign slogan. Campaign slogan.
We're fixing it, dog. That's our campaign slogan. All right?
Yeah.
You know how Ed Cox was like, how I'm doing at every press conference. They're like, what are you doing? What are you doing about the vaccine rollout? It's been slow. We're like, we're fixing it, dog. Next question.
We're fixing it, dog. Okay, what's up? There you go. I'd wear that t-shirt.
Exactly.
Boom.
We fixing it, dog.
What color is the hat, though, that has the slogan on it? The hat. It can't be a red hat.
No, what color is the hat? It's orange and blue, because orange and blue is the flag of New York State. It is also the color of the greatest basketball team in New York City. You know the vibe.
Okay. I'm from San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
So I have strong feelings about the Spurs.
Okay.
But I'm going to let y'all go off.
Okay. You're allowed.
Can we get into some backstory? Can you tell our listeners who might not know how this dynamic duo began?
Ooh. Oh, man. Summer school, you know what I'm saying?
What grade?
A lot of people, for me, it was freshman or sophomore year, going into sophomore year.
Okay.
And then fast forward to the inception of Twitter, you know, there's a Bronx Twitter was a thing, believe it or not. Uh-huh. And we would go back and forth, you know what I'm saying? Like, just talking about similar stuff, similar backgrounds. We're both children of immigrants, you know what I'm saying? Same age bracket. So a lot of stuff that we talked about, we would go back and forth.
How long was the gap between y'all connecting on Twitter and y'all first meeting in summer school?
Well, that had to be over a decade. That was quite some time.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, it wasn't like we were best friends or anything. We just ran in circles. So he was like a friend of a boy, a homie I knew. So it was just like, that's that kid from there. Then we reconnected on Twitter, and then shout out to our guy Donnie Kwa at Complex, who I've been known forever. He was in charge of new products and whatever, and he was like, yo, do you and Meryl want to do a podcast? And I was like, I don't know what the hell a podcast is, so sure, why not? I was working at a job I hated, I had to sneak out of the job in a full suit to come to Complex.
What was the job?
It was for a man. I don't want to give them any shine. So I'll be very cryptic in this. It's a magazine for black people about money.
I know what magazine. Can I
you
say
you know it? What magazine it is.
Don't can say, I say it?
Don't say their name. I don't want to give any props because we and them still got beef. But you know, okay. You every black person knows because it's on the table at your grandma's house.
Well, because exactly. And you'd be like, who was reading this magazine? Ain't nobody reading this
okay,
magazine.
It's 5 pages long. Okay, now you're like, ain't nobody reading this magazine. Imagine if every day you wake up and go into the office to write articles for that magazine. No one's reading it. Imagine you write yourself a nice 400-word article. You put it up, and at the end of the week, you check your traffic, and it has 17 views. How do you keep yourself from jumping out that window, my brother? You know how you do it? You reach into your desk, and you pull out that cold Limerita you bought on Monday. You crack it open at 2:30 p.m.
Limerita.
You crack it open at 2:30 p.m. before that 3 o'clock meeting. You know what I'm saying?
He said Limerita. The specificity.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So, Mero, what job were you doing before all this took off?
I was working at a school, and I did not like my job. It was just hard. I was a paraprofessional on the accelerated teaching path.
Okay.
Shout out to all my paraprofessionals out there, all my TAs. You are the most underappreciated people in the Department of Education, bar none. It's like you got to be a teacher, a bouncer, a counselor, big brother.
Yeah.
Yo, because, you got to break up fights and shit. And it's wild because, like, you know, school safety is supposed to do that. But by the time school safety gets up off the ass and gets up to the fourth floor, you know,
you got to make a Jose
about to tear each other up. You know what I mean? So I got to jump in there and make it happen. But and it was funny because, like, I would leave there and I knew we were on video. So I would, like, leave there, try to get a quick shape up or whatever, hop on the D train and then head down to Complex to do the podcast and link up with Jesus. And it was funny because, like, the first time we met, he came in a suit, and I was just like,
oh,
I was like, what? Yeah. I was like, bro, I was like, we're talking about, like, bagging up and all this wild stuff, and then he comes through with, like, the suit and the tie, and he's just like, yo, so my job, bro.
Yeah, my job.
I was like, all right.
We had to wear a suit every day. We had to wear a suit every day. Thanks. I was like, wow. I was like, why? We work in an office. Why are we wearing a suit?
And
I swear to God, HR said, because white people are watching us. And I was like, what?
What? What? Like, this what? Black magazine? Yeah, this black magazine said
yes.
that?
Oh, yes.
My God. Stop. So what I love about y'all's energy is that it still feels like that energy y'all had years ago when this was starting out. And it seems as if your sensibility hasn't changed. But I'm guessing that, like, the world has changed how it treats you and how it looks at you and how people interact with you. Like, what's it like now walking through the Bronx as the two of you?
You know what?
With, that, you know, the success.
A lot of people, they're just like, they ask that question and they forget. We have to wear masks. People have no idea who I am. People have no idea who I am. Bro, I go to my supermarket and I have to show ID. To get certain, because I live in the Bronx and stuff. Like, Red Bull is locked up. If you buy alcohol in my supermarket, you have to show ID. So every time I buy a beer, I have to show ID. I got the mask on. They don't know. Every now and then people, like, the other day I was getting money out of my money clip and my SAG card fell out. And it was on the floor.
Look at you.
And I was like, whoops, my SAG card. No one in the Bronx knows what the hell that is. They're like, what is that for Best Buy? I was like, you know, like, it's so, nobody
it
knows.
Yellow, that's like your new Social black. Security card?
Yeah.
That's the new Social Bro, Security?
What is that? Yeah. So, and then every now and then, though, like a DoorDash person, like, if I don't have time to get the mask, or, like, say they leave it on my door, like, outside my door, and I'm opening the door, and they're standing there waiting for the elevator, I'll reach out, and I'll be like, yo, thank you. And they'll be like, oh, yo, what? Oh, Jesus. And you get that quick moment. But other than that, in the middle of the penguin, brother, like, it's humbled me.
In the middle of the penguin. Yeah, in the middle of the popcorn pickle. Mm-hmm. Well, so I asked this question because I read in one interview, either one or both of you reflected on the way that police treat you differently now. You know, y'all are both men of color who grew up in the Bronx and were harassed in your youth by police officers in New York. And one of you told a story about, like, police officers now, like, wanting to say hi and how much they love the show. What is that like?
Wild. Yeah. It's like bizarro Twilight Zone level.
Really? You know?
Because growing up, like, we thought stop and frisk was, like, normal. Mm. Like, because, you know, cops just pull you over. All right, yo, assume the position. You gonna frisk me. Like, it is what it is. Fact of life. You know what I mean? Like, we thought that was, like, police procedure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Come to find out, it's not. You know what I mean? But when you're 14, 15, 16, growing up in the hood, you don't know that. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So, like, now, you know, being men of a certain age, I'm not going to blow up our ages.
I know y'all's ages.
But yeah, now that we're grown ass men, it's like, yo, that was not okay. You know what I mean? So that it's like a weird, it's very weird. It's a very weird feel. It's cool, but it's also not cool at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It was like, yo, you weren't on the force. You know what I mean? It wasn't you that put your boot on my head, but maybe it was your uncle.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
and it's weird, especially like at sports events, especially at Yankee games, a lot of, you get stopped by cops on duty and off duty. And they, you know, like a cop is like, hey, get over here. You, as a person of color, you automatically expect the worst. I'm like, okay, I'm going to Rikers. I did something wrong.
Yeah.
And they're like, do the impression. Do the impression. Do the cop impression.
Wait, stop it.
You do it. And they're,
that would scare me to death.
And then like they hit their partner. It, and they're like, he sounds exactly like Joey. I told you, he sounds exactly like Joey. And I'm just like, I'm laughing. I'm like, ha, ha, ha. And inside, I'm like shook to death. I'm like, this is wild. Because, you know, growing up, you never talk to the cops. You never, like, there's an I can only... I can't think of any reason why you talk to, like, even if, like, I drop my phone down a sewer grate, I'm calling 311. I'm not calling 911. I'm not calling a cop. We were never taught that cops were our friends. That was never anything that was even brought into our attention as children. So now to just be interacting with them on any level is just so surreal to us.
Yeah. It's very strange for a cop to be like, yo, can we get a selfie?
Yeah. Like, that would trip me out. Do you think, I mean, we've all watched the protests for racial justice happened over the last year. And I find myself in this new year asking if it's gotten better at all. And I don't know. I can't tell yet. Do y'all think a lot of this stuff with race and policing has gotten better?
I don't think. I feel like, if anything, a lot of the movement has lost its energy in that people who were, you know, saying, you know, people who were all for it, a lot of them online, now they're like, all right, we got Biden. Job's done. We're good. Everything's fixed.
Yeah. Mission accomplished.
And it's like, no, there's a lot more work to be done. You got to put pressure on them. You know, like, Kamala and Joe are going to be, like, very pro-cop. So we're going to have a lot of issues going forward that have not changed going forward. And a lot of people, there's still people saying, like, the best solution is more cops. And people are just like, no, that's not how, that's not going to fix the interactions with the community that's causing these problems. But, you know, I'm not completely Debbie Downing and I'm not completely negative, because it did bring that attention to the eyes of people who probably didn't even think of it before. So at least they're aware of it. It's just on them what the next step they're going to take with that information.
Yeah.
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 I mean, what I will say is that, like, what does give me hope is that, like, you know, people are getting engaged at an earlier age. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's kids that are like, you know, 10, 11, 12, even younger than that. That they are know aware. Stuff.
Yeah. They're researching. Yeah,
they know stuff. You know what I mean? They're researching, they're reading, they're looking into stuff, they're asking questions. And these are things that we didn't do as kids. You know what I mean? We were just kind of like, you know,
we didn't, we're like, you know, we didn't get the internet.
We didn't have the opportunity to. Right. Yeah, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have the access to resources that they have. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's that gives me you know, the not completely like, oh, we did all this for nothing. You know what I mean? Like,
the
youth movement that's swelling, you know what I mean? That's growing is giving me hope as a washed old man.
I could do this all day. I am such a fan of y'all and the work you do and the way you just kind of bring joy in whatever you're doing. And I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much, man. This is a pleasure.
Sam, all right. Big up Sam.
Sam the man.
Thanks again to Desus Nice and the Kid Mero. The third season of their show, Desus and Mero, is now airing on Showtime. You can also listen to their podcast, Bodega Boys, wherever you get your podcasts. And let me tell you, that podcast, there's one episode recently where they're doing this hilarious, totally, totally bonkers Fauci impersonation, which cracked me up. All right, this episode of It's Been a Minute was produced by Andrea Gutierrez, and it was edited by Jordana Hochman. Listeners, we are back in your feeds on Friday. Till then, be good to yourselves. I'm Sam Sanders. We'll talk soon. Can y'all do an AKA for NPR?
AKA for NPR. You know the vibe. AKA.
Oh, yo. NPR, AKA Sotto Voce FM. You know what I'm saying? AKA, yo, we talking low, but we loud. You know what I'm saying? AKA.
Yo, AKA, leave me on when you leave the house to go to work. So your pets become very smart and they know about conflicts in nations you didn't even know about. Like, yo, you come in and your dog looks at you like, yo, do you know what's going on in Botswana? Do you know about the cartels? How do you feel about their rigged elections? And you're like, whoa, yo, my, yo, what happened to my animal? He's wild smart. Also, NPR, if you want to flex on your Uber driver, you come in there, he's like, yo, you want to hear hip hop? You go, no, that was kind of racist. Actually, I want to hear NPR. Why would you think?
NPR,
why,
sir.
Why do you think I want to hear hip hop? And he's like, you requested I took you to a Bow Wow concert. And I'm like, oh, that's true. Wow, sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah.